So, this week's parsha of Eira, we're told, is the year 2448, which is the same year that the Jews left Mitzrayim. Moshe had his first intercession with Paro, which was a complete failure. The situation became worse, not better, and Moshe began to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that that's not what I thought it meant. I thought I would come and we'd take positive steps toward redemption, but it wouldn't be, you know, 1 foot forward, 3 feet back. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then says to Moshe, right, you're not as good as Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. They never saw any fruition of the promises I made to them. And what he says is, you know, hold on. He says, we're going to take the Jews out. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu then tells Moshe that the redemption is at hand. And he uses the four statements of Gula that we commemorate when we have the four cups of wine at the Seder. And it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe and B'nai Yisroel to tell the Jews and Paro, we're getting out of here. You're getting out of here. That's Risha. In Sheni and Shlishi, the Yichus of Moshe Rabbeinu is delineated. We're told he is 80 years old and Aharon is 83. Moshe encompasses Paro, and we have a famous situation where Moshe takes Aaron's staff, it becomes a snake. Paro laughs and says, you can't teach us any new tricks, and he has all his magicians turn staffs into snakes. Aaron's staff goes back into being a staff, and the staff swallows on all the snakes. And Paro, even though he's been bested in his black magic, he doesn't pay attention. Moshe gives Paro warning. The way the situation works with the Makos is you get a significant warning before 1, 4, and 7. You get less of a warning with Makos 2, 5, and 8. And with 3, 6, 9, there is no warning. And this repeats itself 3 times. Moshe then creates causes to happen through Aaron hitting the water and the sand. First, the dam, the blood. And secondly, the sardeia, the frogs. Aaron is the one who has to do this because Moshe had been saved by water with Bithya and by sand when the sand covered up the dead Mitzri. And then the Chamishi, we have Kinim without any warning. And then we have a repetition, right, by the fourth Mak Oroiz. In Shishi, we have Dever Shchin and Borod. It's Arbe, rather, right? And then we get to Borod. And again, Paro is refusing. It says Paro hardens his heart and he refuses to let Klal Yisrael go. And we have this phenomena. It seems that at first the Kadosh Baruch Hu hardens Paro's heart. He gives him an extra measure of stubbornness so he doesn't give in too easily. In other words, we're told he makes the scales even, that Paro wouldn't want to give in, so he lets them not give in. And then after Paro doesn't take anything to heart, Paro himself goes into what we call the denial mode. He hardens his own heart. Rav Nachum Liebtag, in an essay written in January of 1996, 29 years ago, talks about the preparations for Geula with our Parsha. And he opens up by saying, was Geulas Mitzrayim supposedly now to be automatic? 400 years have passed. And does this make it an unconditional redemption for Klal Yisrael, regardless of anything they may do or may not do? Or is there really something they need to do to move the Geula process along? He says, the opening psukim in Parshas Ve'erah seems to indicate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, is going to do the redemption gratis, so to speak, something he promised to the Avos, right? But he says, let's look a little more closely at the actual text. He says, let's talk about the opening of Parshas Ve'erah. In Parsha Shmos, Moshe received two missions, he says. One mission is to inform Jewish people the time has come for Hashem to fulfill his promise made to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov to take Klal Yisrael back Eretz Kanaan. And there's a second requirement. Moshe is to command Paro to allow the Bnei Yisrael to journey into the desert and worship Hashem. As we saw, when Moshe first came and said, Pokad Pokadati, the people believed. They became enthusiastic. They were ready for Geula. But Paro's revenge on them for feeling this way resulted in a worse situation. And the people turned to Moshe and said, why have you made things worse for us? They said that right first to Moshe, that look what you've done, you've caused us to have twice the amount of work. And Moshe sees what the effect caused that Paro became even a greater tyrant. And interestingly enough, instead of doubling the amount of work, the amount of produce they would have to do, he instead said, no, make the same amount and you find the raw material to do it, which is even more difficult. And what it shows is Pyro wasn't interested in getting more bricks, having a more productive, right, slave army producing things. He just wanted to be worse. He wanted to make them feel even worse. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? Listen, as Moshe says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why have you made things worse for these people? Why have you sent me? From the time that I came to Paro to speak in your name, all we see is a worse situation. And I don't see, and you haven't saved your people. Parshas Va'era opens up with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response to that. He says to Moshe, he has indeed determined the time to fulfill the bris of Isaac. Here, and he says, tell B'nai Yisroel that I am God and I will take them out and I will save them from their bondage and I will bring them to the land. And the Rabbi Shag says, let's look at the wording. This seems to be a new commandment. Was it merely to reassure Klal Yisroel after their disappointment, right? Well, if that's the case, it says, V'loshomu es Moshe. They didn't listen to Moshe. Yikaitza ruach avoid akasha. They didn't have the spirit. They were short on spirit. And the work had exhausted them. So what is this comment, right, to the B'nai Yisrael? And he says, to try to figure out what this means, he says, we got to look more closely at the actual Hebrew word. V'lo shamu el Moshe mikol zeruach avod akasha, right? What does v'lo shamu? They didn't listen. He says, there's, based on the way this verb is used in Chumash, there's a number of possibilities. A, did they not hear what Moshe said? Could it be they didn't comprehend? This seems unlikely. It also unlikely that they didn't hear the words. Because how could you say they couldn't comprehend? It wasn't a disguised message. The third case is they didn't believe Moshe. But if that's the case, why does the Torah use the word, right? V'lo shamu, say v'lo ha'aminu, they didn't believe. So he says, I'm left with the last possibility. V'lo shamu, they didn't obey what Moshe told them. He says, this is a common usage of this verb. But where, pray tell, do we see that Moshe gave them a commandment, something to do? And he says, I want to look at the following three psukim and try and figure this out. Then God told Moshe, speak to Paroi, that I should send B'nai, that he should send B'nai Yisroel from his land. And Moshe's reaction was, if B'nai Yisroel l'shamu, if the Jews don't listen, Kal v'chomer, how is Paroi going to listen? He says, if we're going to say that this is one of the first Kal v'chomer, right? Learning something from the obvious, something bigger. He says, then we've got to have the same usage of the word, the verb, in both cases. We know the lo shamu in Paro's context is, hell no, they won't go. He's not going to listen. If that's the case, the same verb shamu must also mean obey. And Moshe seems to be saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if the Jews won't obey me, how do you expect Paro to do so? This Kal Vachomer, by Leitag says, is the, I guess he says, it's the framework that indicates to us clearly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was money. He was asking something from Klal Yisroel. They weren't to sit back and be passive. There was something required. And so, he says, the job of anybody reading Chumash is to go back through the words and try to discern what it is Klal Yisroel was asked to do. And he says, he said, right, they tell them, Ani Hashem, I am God. Right? Elohim spoke to Moshe and said, Ani Hashem, I appeared to the Avot. And now I have remembered my children in Mitzrayim. Therefore, I want you to tell Bnei Yisroel second, I'm out of order here, I apologize. Okay. Having a problem. Therefore, right? Tell Bnei Yisroel that I am Hashem, and I will take them out, and I will save them. And then they will know, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am God, their God, who has taken them out of Egypt, and I will take them to the land and give it to them as an inheritance. And the bookmark is Ani Hashem. I am Hashem. There is a focus on this message to Klal Yisroel. Is this repeated mention of Ani Hashem? Not only does he tell the Jewish people of their imminent redemption, but somehow they're being given a message that I'm commanding you, Ani Hashem Elokeichem. And this is maybe or probably what Hashem is ordering Klal Yisroel. He's not talking about a mere intellectual thought pattern. Oh, it's my God. It's talking about an internalization of Ani Hashem Elokeichem. He says, which is supposed to generate an immediate inner drive to do a Kadosh Baruch Hu's will and a willingness to command, willingness to obey what Hashem commands. And we know that Anochi Hashem Elokecha is the start of the Aseres HaDibros. In other words, Ani Hashem is a mitzvah demanding Klal Yisroel prepare themselves spiritually for leaving Mitzrayim. This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's call to do proper tshuva. Therefore, Moshe's mission is no less difficult here than to Paro. He has to educate Klal Yisrael how to do tshuva. Just as Paro needs to be convinced to recognize God's existence and bow to Hashem, Klal Yisrael must become Maminim. They must become those who truly believe HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this requires proper tshuva. And he says, I'm going to prove this. He quotes from Yechezkel, right? And he says that in the 20th chapter of Yechezkel, Yechezkel warns a group of elders have come to him, reminding them of the appalling behavior of their ancestors before Golas Mitzrayim. He quotes, on the day that I made myself known to them in Mitzrayim, when I said, Ani Hashem Elokeichem, on that day, I swore to take them out of Mitzrayim into a land flowing with milk and honey. And I said to them, each man must rid himself of his detestable ways and not defile himself with the fetishes in Mitzrayim. Ani Hashem Elokeichem. But they rebelled against me. They did not want to listen to me. And no one rid themselves of their detestable ways. They didn't give up the fetishes of Mitzrayim. And I resolved, he says, to pour my anger out on them. Yechezkel says explicitly what Shefer Shmo seems to only imply. Hashem called Bnei Yisroel to do tshuva, to basically metaher, to cleanse themselves from the tumah of Egyptian culture, to be ready to go out. Unfortunately, Navi tells us they didn't obey, and they really deserve to be destroyed in Eretz Mitzrayim. Only because of the sake of a Kodesh Baruch Hu, not to have a Chilul Hashem, did Hashem redeem them. And this notion that they were steeped in Tumah, right? Rabbi Litag suggests is why we say they had reached the Memtet Sharei Tumah, right? The 49th, the last level of Tumah that they could reach before they would never be redeemed. Okay. We're going to stop here.